Hello and welcome to this emergency edition of the 538 Politics podcast. Jeff Sessions has been fired, or at least asked to resign by the president, as his letter puts it. We're still in the process of processing the midterm election results, crunching the numbers and looking at the trends, and we are going to have more coverage of the election for you tomorrow. But these events call for an emergency podcast, so we will answer that call. And here with me to do that are managing editor Micah Cohen. Hey, Micah.
Hello, Galen.
Tired enough yet?
It's like there's nothing worse than reporters and editors and media people complaining about having to cover too much news. But for fuck's sake.
But we're going to do it.
Come on.
All right.
It's a break.
And also here with us is senior writer Perry Bacon Jr. How's it going, Perry?
Thanks for having me, Galen.
Okay. So Trump has suggested that this would happen for some time. Why today?
I think the obvious is he waited till after the election because it would look bad to... We should explain what happened here. It's not just that he fired Jeff Sessions, but that he has installed Matthew Whitaker, who is Sessions' chief of staff, but has written an op-ed last year laying out essentially his argument that the Mueller probe has went too far. He made some CNN comments sort of questioning it, at some point even laying out the idea that a new attorney general could actually sort of curtail the funds of it. So it looks like in this case we have a new attorney general who's going to oversee the Russian investigation instead of Rod Rosenstein, who had been the deputy, and someone who's very skeptical of it. So it looks like Trump has moved to sort of get rid of his biggest problem immediately after the midterms.
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe I, because I'm cautious, but right before we started recording, I turned to Perry and I was like, the modal outcome here is that Whitaker moves to constrain the Mueller investigation. And Perry looked at me like, no, yes, of course. And the more you read about Whitaker, the more that no shit becomes obvious.
And Whitaker is the acting attorney general as of today. But in order for him to continue long term as the attorney general or for somebody else to do so, that person has to be confirmed by the Senate. Is there any reason to expect that Whitaker wouldn't be confirmed by the Senate? And how long does he have in office before he has to get a confirmation vote?
So my understanding is there's something called the Vacancies Act, in which Trump can appoint someone, or the president can appoint someone who's up to 210 days in this slot. So that's several months. The question I don't know the answer to is if Trump intends to have Whitaker as be the permanent attorney general, if he has someone else, maybe like Lindsey Graham in mind or something for the job permanently. I think the important thing here is that Whitaker is a Trump loyalist in a way that, you know, Trump believed Sessions did not behave like, and Rosenstein did not either. So you really have, I think the phrase sort of slow motion Saturday Night Massacre has been used, and there's something to be said for that. Like the fact that you've had James Comey removed, you had the deputy to FBI removed, you now have Sessions removed, you might have Rosenstein removed later on today, it sounds like. So you are having a purging a lot of the people that Trump does not like in the law enforcement.
Yeah, that's totally right. And to tie things to Tuesday's results, the fact that if Trump does want to name a permanent AG, the extra few seats he has in the Senate might, you know, matter. That could make things easier.
Presumably. We still don't have all the results, of course, in the Senate.
Right.
Not just the numbers, but also you have a Bob Corker who, right, whatever you think about him, occasionally was a restraint on the president, replaced by Marsha Blackburn, who I think never will be. So I think the McCain's gone now. The new senators you're going to have is likely to be a group that is more pro-Trump than the group before.
Hey, don't undersell Mitt Romney.
Yeah, Mitt Romney is the exception. But no, Perry's point is really important. I think Perry has written about this, but in the first 2 years of Trump, you saw much more pushback of him in the Senate than in the House. Now we're going to see the exact reverse of that because Democrats will control the House. The other thing, though, is I'm not sure Trump will ever want to, you know, Trump might stick with Whitaker for as long as he freaking can, because all signs are that Whitaker is about as much of a Trump loyalist as you can get and is about as skeptical of the Mueller probe as you can get. So, you know, I think he's in there probably for 210 days.
Well, and longer if he can get confirmed.
If he can get confirmed, yeah.
Is there any reason to expect that he wouldn't be confirmed?
Well, it depends what he does between now and then. If he takes really egregious steps to constrain Mueller, I'd have to think that, and, you know, depending on how the public reacts, right, Perry, I'd have to think it'd be a little hard.
I mean, I think we have a lot of unknowns here. It seems to be Mueller is a pretty strategic and smart person. I don't think it came out of nowhere to him that Trump was likely to try to limit the investigation post-election. So I do wonder if the Mueller probe maybe only has a few indictments or a few days left in the first place, or if he has some plan to hand his research over to the House, which is now run by Democrats. I don't know the answer to these questions. So I think that's partly, but I do think Whitaker is there, and I think he specifically, like, this is the Department of Justice. They could have found a person I would have heard of, or you guys would have heard of, who was a famous person lead this. I think Whitaker has been chosen for loyalty reasons is a big part of that. So I don't expect him to let Mueller do much more.
The question I have, I think there are leverage points that the person in the Justice Department overseeing the Mueller probe has, where even if Mueller finished this probe tomorrow, that person could affect what happens next. Like, there's some part of this, Amelia has written about this, but there's some part of this where whatever report Mueller files, if he does that, who's ever overseeing the probe at the Justice Department can sort of decide what to do with that. Now, maybe that report finds its way into the media anyway or whatever, but even if Mueller wraps this up relatively soon, which we don't know that will happen, Whitaker could still have some power to affect what happens next, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about the possibility of Whitaker curtailing the Mueller investigation. Are there specific actions that he could start taking now to do that? What kind of measures does that encompass?
So the thing Whitaker himself floated on CNN before he started working with DOJ was he would sort of limit the funding of the investigation. So, you know, Mueller has this big team of lawyers. I guess this will probably take more than tomorrow, but I guess in theory this week he could say these five lawyers have to go back to their regular jobs, or they have to, you know, you could imagine something very quickly happening here. I think the big thing, the question is, like, if Mueller was about to indict Roger Stone next month, and Roger Stone, of course, being someone that's close to the president, it might involve WikiLeaks. We don't know that, but that's the thing where it's like, I never assumed that, like, Don Jr. or the president himself were likely to be indicted by Mueller, but I do think close associates who might suggest something nefarious happened with Russia in 2016, that's the question. Is like, there's already been a big string of indictments. My guess is the president will further not be too many more, and this is a way of potentially really, truly blocking, impeding, obstructing the investigation.
Which I think would be, frankly, a mistake on Trump's part. We've written this on the site, Amelia has, and I think you have too, Perry, that even if Whitaker shuts down the Mueller probe, especially with Democrats now in charge of the House, the investigation of the Trump campaign's ties to Russia and Russian interference in the election is not going to stop. First of all that work Mueller has done won't just disappear. There are parts of the investigation that have been taken up by state attorneys general, right? Now, maybe if you're in Trump's camp, you say, well, I'd rather have a Democratic House investigating me than Mueller, because the Democratic House is partisan, would probably be easier to paint in a partisan light. But still, I think, look, in the exit polls of, you know, the national exit polls on Tuesday, they asked about approval, disapproval of Mueller's handling of the Russia investigation. 41% approved, 46% disapproved. Those are not great numbers. Now, this is coming at the end of several months where Mueller has been really quiet, but I think we have seen that views of the Mueller investigation have tended to improve when Trump has acted to curtail it. And so if Whitaker gets in this job and starts trying to block Mueller, I think you're going to see the public move more towards Mueller's side against Trump.
And of course, we expected that Mueller would go somewhat silent in the run-up to the midterms. And now that the midterms are over, that may end. And we've seen in the past when he does file indictments and so on, his approval sometimes goes up. Is that correct?
That's right. When he has laid out those indictments in the past and they're full of detail and they're persuasive, then yeah, views of the investigation have improved.
I guess the question I always have would be, does Trump care about polls and politics right now. He managed to fire someone the day after the election, so he has the maximum 2 years possible until he has to go before the voters again. So I do think, and you've already seen, what surprised me the most is that I've seen so far is, for a while, the Republican senators, remember last year Trump was really attacking Sessions and Lindsey Graham, John Cornyn, and a lot of his former colleagues. Remember, Sessions was a well-liked senator, you know, for a long time. But today, all I've seen is, like, it was basically, you know, Jeff Sessions had a nice career, Lindsey Graham said, and it's, you know, and the time has come. And I think that tells you, this is a story about what we saw yesterday, which is those Senate races, which is that we are now the sort of Trump takeover of the Republican Party, I think, is, we could argue, is pretty full now. And I think a good example of that is Sessions has carried out the Trump policy agenda pretty intensely, and he got sort of nothing for that. He was, like, fired not even 24 hours after the election was over. He, like, no mercy whatsoever, which tells you, you know, Trump wanted loyalty, and the party is accepting Trump's view of that.
We should spend at least a little bit of this podcast talking about this. But one, I think the point Perry just made is important, which is, whatever Trump's Republican Party is, policy is, like, not an important part of it. You know, it's about loyalty. It's about personality and tone and who you're against. But let's talk for a second about what Sessions did at DOJ. I mean, I think you'd have to call him one of Trump's most, on policy, most successful cabinet members, right?
Yeah, in terms of, like, trying to curb immigration, legal and illegal and some extent legal immigration, in terms of trying to identify with the Trump coalition, like, you know, they fought affirmative action. The Obama Justice Department had tried to really increase scrutiny of police departments. The Sessions backed off on that. He tried to prosecute pot more. Like, he was very skeptical of Islam. He was very, you know, if you look at his actual, like, policy views and you compare it to what Trump campaigned on, the kind of identity politics of Trump, I think, who has been best executed of all the cabinet members by Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions is very, you know, like, a lot of people on the left are, you know, whatever they think about the rule of law, are very happy to see Sessions go because they hated his actual policy decisions. But I don't think they wanted to let him see him go for this particular reason.
Again, I'm just repeating something Perry wrote, but it's like Sessions brought white identity politics to the Department of Justice, where it is pretty amazing where, while before the Department of Justice would act or sue or whatever to protect the rights of minority communities or historically disadvantaged communities, the Sessions Justice Department moved that much more towards protecting the rights of the Trump coalition, white people, religious people, that combined with a general more kind of law and order crackdown on drugs and all that kind of stuff. He moved that department like 180 degrees, and it's all just like, well, who gives a shit?
You said that Trump's Republican Party cares more about personal loyalty than policy. And Perry, of course, you mentioned that we did not see a bunch of senators today speaking out against this move. Does that follow as far as the voters are concerned? Is there any part of the conservative movement that really liked Jeff Sessions and is sad to see him go? Or is it all about loyalty to Trump and, hey, Trump didn't like you, you recused yourself from this investigation, and so you got to go, even though you have, like, kind of held up the mantle of a big part of this conservative movement for decades?
Oh, come on, Perry. There's going to be a conservative revolt against Trump in defense of Sessions. The voters will make their voices heard.
So there's a reporter named Caitlin Collins who works at CNN. She covers the White House, and she's from Alabama and has some sources there. And she tweeted out before I came on, you know, by the end, the attacks on Trump, on Sessions by Trump, had worked so well and were so effective that when, you know, in Alabama, people who used to be like Sessions were like, you know, maybe you should move on. Are you doing the right thing? Why have you defended the president enough? So even in his own home state that elected him senator repeatedly, he had lost it. I would be curious. I think there are some policy lines that are interesting here.
Think tankers maybe who are sad today?
I think not on this issue. I do think if Trump fired Jim Mattis, for example, I do think there's some questions about, and he tried to install, like, John Bolton as defense secretary. I think there'd be some debate about, do we want this kind of person? I don't think the Republican Party is, like, post-policy at all. I just think in this case, the assumption is Whitaker will have conservative views on law and order. I think the assumption is Whitaker will be good on all the issues they want, plus will be anti-Russia investigation.
Oh, I think the Republican Party is post-policy. I mean, I think there are people in D.C. and in these think tanks and in Congress who care deeply about this stuff. But like the voters, I don't think they care.
Perry mentioned some other staffing shakeups that we might see in the White House now that the midterms are behind us. So let's talk about that. But before we do, let me tell you that today's podcast is brought to you by Bixler Jewelry. Bixler is partnered with hundreds of enterprises to create officially licensed fine jewelry collections featuring handcrafted designs and custom-made styles to capture the essence of your favorite sports teams, television shows, films, and so much more, including jewelry specifically designed for your school spirit. With offbeat designs and over 230 years of rich history, they have school spirit down. They have collections from the Big Ten, SEC, ACC, Big 12, Pac-12, U.S. Air Force Academy, and more. For 20% off your first purchase, visit Bixlers.com and enter code 538 at checkout. That's Bixlers, Bixlers.com with promo code 538. That's the numbers, not the letters, 538. Bixlers.com, promo code 538. Okay, Perry, let's continue with your thought before the break. Who else is potentially on the chopping block now that the midterms are over?
My understanding is the Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Nelson, potentially. Jim Mattis, the Defense Secretary. Ryan Zinke, Interior Secretary, who has had some ethics issues. Sessions is gone now. Rod Rosenstein, potentially as a deputy AG. So I think it's not unusual, Bush, Obama, Clinton. It's not unusual to like reshuffle your team after the first 2 years. So that's not unusual. But I do think you're likely to see some of the people that Trump picked because the Washington establishment liked them, he's been gradually clearing out those people. And I think Mattis is the last person on the national security team. And I think that they've had a lot of clashes. And I think Sessions was also someone who's picked in part because Congress liked him. And I think now that's also irrelevant. I don't know if Whitaker knows anyone. I'm not sure it matters. Yeah, I think you're going to see a reshuffling of the cabinet broader than you would expect in a normal administration.
You were just making the argument, Micah, that the Republican Party is post-policy. So does Trump now basically have free rein to replace anybody in his cabinet or in the White House with really like whoever he likes and there aren't repercussions?
I think so, yeah, especially with an increased margin in the Senate. But, I think this part of things is actually the least abnormal part of things, where, as Perry said, presidents typically, you know, do a little shakeup post-midterms or post-election. Maybe this one will be a little broader than normal. But, you know, in general, presidents can appoint who they want. There are exceptions to that. But I think that's kind of not ahistoric. Yeah.
Let me disagree with Mike a bit here.
Cut his mic off.
The idea that the party is post-policy. I think if Trump wanted to nominate someone to the cabinet who supported like a big infrastructure bill or who was pro-choice or something that was like, I think that the fact that the Republican Party is getting so much behind Trump has been because he campaigned as a different kind of Republican, but is governed as a Paul Ryan Republican. And they've liked that and they've sort of paid him back for that. I think this loyalty to him has like, Mitch McConnell at a press conference today, Mitch McConnell was praising Trump. Oh, remember they had a lot of tension last year, but I think at some point McConnell has decided, I want judges, Trump delivers, I want to get more Senate seats, Trump campaigns and helps us out. I do think that Trump's alignment on policy has, you know, the policy the Republican Party in the Hill likes has given him loyalty back. I do think the fact that Kavanaugh and Gorsuch were confirmed made the Senate more willing to sort of shuck Sessions and they'll accept Whitaker and these kinds of moves because the policy is going the way they want it to.
No, I agree with all that. I just think it's definitely true that elected officials, and I would actually say this of both parties, to some extent. Elected officials care about policy, but I think even they care about policy less than they say they do and less than is often portrayed in the media. Voters, though, I think if Trump nominated a pro-choice head of the Health and Human Services Department, I think he could get away with that.
All right.
Did we disagree on
no,
that?
No, no, I agree with you. I think that there'd be some complaining about Mike Pence would privately let loose the Washington know that he didn't like it. But I think, yeah, actually, in terms of the vote, it would be fine. Yeah, in terms of the public, it would be fine. Yeah.
Voters would that we would not see voters marching in the street. I don't think, but you know, I've been surprised a lot. So what do I know?
Is there any situation in which that wouldn't be the case? Is there a specific policy? Would it be immigration? Like if the Secretary of Homeland Security was replaced by somebody who supported, you know, a much more liberal immigration policy, would that be a bridge too far?
I don't think so. I think
there's literally nothing.
So there's two parts of that question. One part is like, is a cabinet appointment enough of a high profile thing that the public writ large will care about it? And I think in general, the answer is no. I think we all care about cabinet appointments, but like average person on the street, I don't think could name three people in Trump's cabinet. I don't mean that in a derogatory way. It's just like, you know, they have bigger and better things to care about. If Trump announced tomorrow, like total amnesty.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Exactly that. The 11 million are citizens. I think there would be a Fox News revolt.
Yes.
And that might be a problem. Yes. I actually think that would be close to where I was going to get to. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's right. So I think if Trump went like way extreme on immigration, then yes. You know, if Trump signed a DACA bill, would he have problems with his voters? I'd be interested to see how that played out. My hunch is that his voters would stay loyal to him, but I'd be interested to see how that plays out. Galen, you're pointing to immigration, I think, is important in that that more than other issues feels like a driver
of everything else. Like the reason he has so much loyalty is because he's been so solid on that issue for people who care a lot about it.
Even there, they've kind of forgot the wall. You know, I went to a rally with Trump on Friday and people kept saying, build the wall. I was thinking, you've had 2 years right. And he has not really pressed that much, and they didn't seem to care that much.
Well, that's right. It's like all the data we have shows that like immigration is so meaningful in predicting support for Trump. But it's probably not because people like really want a wall. It's probably that immigration is just a proxy for more conservative, quote unquote, views on race, on gender, on culture. So people who, for example, think that, you know, the average wealth of the black family is lower than the average wealth of the white family, is that because of systemic factors or is that because people don't work hard enough? More people who say, you know, it's about hard work, pulling yourself up by the bootstraps, that kind of answer on a question is like incredibly predictive of whether you are a Republican or a Democrat, whether you support Trump or not. And I think immigration is kind of the perfect issue where it captures all of that. It captures, do you have sort of like a little bit of racial animus? Are you a flat out racist? You know, do you have kind of throwback views on gender? Immigration sweeps all that up into like one issue, which is why it's such a meaningful variable. And when we like look at this stuff.
Okay. We have gotten a little bit off track, but I think what this maybe serves to show is that Trump does have pretty broad range in terms of what he can do going forward in making staffing adjustments. So maybe instead of having an emergency podcast for every time he fires someone, you can kind of just use this podcast as a template.
Just play it again.
For what will happen.
So the big question from Tuesday is, there's a Democratic House.
Yeah.
What kind of constraint are they? Like, you've had Pelosi throughout the campaign say, we will not impeach. And then earlier this week, she was like, we want to be bipartisan. We want to work with Trump a lot. He received that by saying, if you investigate me, we'll investigate you too in the Senate. And, you know, so that was one thing. And then this firing, I'm sure they're not happy about. I do think you're going to have a test now of like, it seems to me that Trump has taken Pelosi's rhetoric and we'll never impeach you as an invitation. Well, we'll see how far I can stretch that out. I mean, I do wonder if there's an attempt to push out Mueller, what does that mean for the House of Democrats? I don't think they can just say, well, there's some gap between impeachment and doing nothing, but they haven't really said what they're going to do. They don't seem to be particularly organized about that. They don't even know who their speaker is going to be right now, despite, you know, Pelosi's leader. They don't know who speaker is right now. But that's the key question is the constraint is supposed to be the House of Democrats on Trump, but I'm not sure they're organized, strategic, or ready to really do that.
Yeah, the other thing, just in terms of how we're thinking about this news is, I think what we've been talking about, what in the way you summed it up, Galen, is right, which is that Trump has broad range to do whatever the hell he wants with his cabinet. The news here, the important news here, isn't that Trump is replacing someone in his cabinet. It's that he's replacing the person overseeing the Mueller probe, and he's replacing that person with someone we know is very loyal to Trump and very skeptical of the Mueller probe and has, like, literally laid out plans to curtail the Mueller probe. Like, you could not make that up. That is, like, important. And if he does that, then I would imagine that, again, I think the public will move against Trump if there are blatant attempts to curtail the Mueller probe, and that could be bad for him politically. What I don't know, and what I don't think anyone really knows, is, you know, that's all the politics surrounding the Mueller probe. What does this do to the literal mechanics of the Mueller probe? Like Perry mentioned, funding, what happens to any reports that are generated? That, I think, is very complicated and kind of hard to suss out.
And as Perry mentioned, how do Democrats react with their new bit of power in Washington? But I think let's leave it there. Does anybody have anything else to add?
I want to go to bed.
All right. Well, thank you, Perry.
Thank you.
And thank you, Micah.
My pleasure.
And as I mentioned, we have a lot more data to dig into, a lot more analysis to do of the midterm elections, which happened yesterday. It may already seem like quite a long time ago, given that the news does not stop. But we will have that for you tomorrow. We'll have Nate on the show, of course. I'm sure he does not have much at all to say about the midterm elections yesterday. Anyway, my name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcasts store. When you leave a rating, it helps our rankings, which helps others discover the show or just tell someone about us. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.